TED Audio Collective.
What is the status of your Facebook friendship right now?
I don't think we're friends, are we?
You're not friends. Wait, so who unfriended whom?
Oh, God, probably me or you. I don't know.
It was definitely you, Andrew.
Jabari, it wasn't you.
No.
Then I guess it was probably me.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but you did send me that really shitty meme.
You're growing a business, and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate, no coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Hi, I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva Magic Write is right for you at canva.com, designed for work.
Hey, and welcome to Conversations with People Who Hate Me, the show where I take negative online conversations and move them offline. I'm your host, Dylan Marin. Now, in some episodes, I chat one-on-one with folks who wrote negative things to me directly, while other times I moderate conversations between strangers who clashed with each other. Today, I'm moderating, but not between strangers. My guests today are friends. Or they were friends. They are unfriends. Jabari and Andrew had been Facebook friends for over a decade when they clashed over their political views during the 2016 election. But it's not how you might expect. They are both active participants on the left. Andrew is proudly a Democrat, while Jabari supports and even ran for local office with the Green Party. Their disagreements online, which were ultimately about how to best achieve progress, became so toxic that one unfriended the other. First, I'll speak to Jabari, then I'll speak to Andrew, and then I'll connect them on a group call where they'll have their first ever extended offline conversation about their disagreement. So, let's get started. Here is Jabari. I don't want to brag, but we're starting a minute early.
Oh.
So, Jabari, you get bragging rights, babe.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Tell me about you.
Wow. So broad. I'm a 30-year-old artist, activist, teacher that is trying to figure out very recently where I should steer my life. Mm-hmm. And it's steering me a lot towards politics. Mm-hmm. and away from the arts, but in a good way, because mm-hmm. I really enjoy political organizing mm-hmm. now. And I'm from New York. I'm from Brooklyn mm-hmm. originally. Been here almost my entire life, except for when I left for grad school. Mm-hmm. And I'm vegan, which we tell everybody.
So, Jabari, you recently ran for office.
Mm-hmm.
What motivated you to do that?
You know, I've been doing a lot of activism for years and years, and like all the rallies, all the protests, but also like drafting the petitions, getting them signed, fighting for this, fighting for that. And it stopped feeling like enough after Trump was elected. Mm-hmm. And like people had like mentioned to me on social media, I should think about running. And I remember just standing in the rain the night after he got elected at Trump Tower, shouting until I was hoarse and thinking like, this isn't going to do anything. This isn't enough. And I figured I'd run for office and I'd run at the local level because that's where you can make a big difference. And I ran on the Green Party ticket.
Maybe people listening only know Republicans and Democrats, right? Like, mm-hmm. what is the Green Party?
So the Greens, one thing in the name, which is just ecological wisdom and ecological justice. So we're for the environment. And that's what people hear when they say green. Mm-hmm. But we're also for social justice and for peace and for grassroots democracy.
Now, let's backpedal a little to the 2016 election, because the reason we even started talking about you being on this podcast was that you, like almost all of us, were actively posting things online. Mm-hmm. Now, you were actively posting in support of Bernie, right? And then you, as you told me, you were actively supporting Jill Stein. Mm-hmm. What was the kind of pushback you got for that?
You know, it's crazy. I got a lot of pushback for the Jill Stein, which is, well, yeah, I mean, people felt like I was going to ruin America, is what it felt like to me. And one of the amount of efforts to, like, you know, get me to, like, fall in line and vote for Hillary Clinton, which seemed to me very unnecessary, especially given that I lived in New York and, like, it's going to go blue anyway. But also just the sense of, like, you know, your vote doesn't belong to any particular candidate. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I was really interested in building a third party, and I knew that if the Greens reached 5% of the vote, they would get all these goodies, like federal funding and ballot access in all these states. And I was like, well, I'm going to build a multi-party system, so.
What would you say to someone, as I'm sure you've gotten a lot, who said that by voting for Jill Stein, you elected Trump?
I would say that half the country did not vote. So this notion that, like, you know, if only people hadn't voted for Jill Stein, they all would have voted for Hillary Clinton, is to me as ridiculous as saying if only Hillary Clinton hadn't ran, all her voters would have gone to Jill Stein, making Jill Stein win, which is not how voting works. When you don't have a candidate that represents you, you just don't vote. And that's evident from the half of the country that does not vote. They're apathetic. I would also mention that I begrudgingly, despite my differences with Hillary Clinton, went down to Pennsylvania to knock on doors and help and try to broker some vote trades. I tried to broker vote swaps in swing states where I would get people in swing states to vote for Hillary in exchange for somebody in a safe state like New York or California voting for Jill Stein. I wasn't super successful. I brokered two votes, one in Pennsylvania.
Great.
One in New Hampshire. I think Hillary lost both of those.
That's still all there were. Those were the only two people who voted in the 2016 election. So congratulations. That's really great. I remember in the 2016 election, I was seeing your posts, right? And seeing just like the war that was happening in the comment sections. But it wasn't Trump supporters, you know, who were like attacking you. It was liberals who were very pro-Hillary.
It was liberals. It was progressives. It was people that were for Bernie but decided to go for Hillary. It was tons of things.
When I first approached you for this podcast to see if you wanted to have any of these conversations, you told me about a friend of yours, actually, named Andrew, who you are friends with IRL and not friends with online. Tell me about the nuance of your relationship with Andrew.
So what's interesting with Andrew is that we met in 2005, 13 years ago now, at a high school acting competition at the end of high school, and probably did not talk again for 11 years until the 2016 primaries.
But you became friends on Facebook.
We became friends on Facebook.
The crucial inciting incident.
Yes. Yes. So, and that was, you know, shortly after we met in 2005. Right, so we were friends on Facebook, but not talking because you have many friends on Facebook you don't talk to.
Yeah.
And unless an election happens like 2016.
Oh, yes.
And then you talk because I was a strong Bernie supporter and he was a strong Hillary supporter. And we did not see eye to eye. And
and how did that manifest in online speak?
You know, he would troll some of my posts, I would troll some of his posts, and it would escalate just because I think that's the nature of Facebook arguments, and especially if you start to develop a rivalry with somebody on Facebook, which I'm not sure if everyone has one, but I definitely started a few in the 2016 election, and it ultimately ended with him unfriending me on Facebook, probably, I think, during the primary still.
Oh, so you're not currently friends on Facebook?
We're not currently friends on Facebook, but...
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's been... almost approaching 2 years now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, I didn't tell you. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
We'll talk on Facebook Messenger. We're not friends.
Oh, my God. That's like such a new modern thing to like that you are still connected on Messenger, but not legally friends according to Facebook.
Yeah, and like my posts are public, his posts are public, so we can see what the other person's posting.
That's so funny. So he made a post imploring his New York City friends to vote in the 2017 elections when you were running, and in it he made a point to say, "Don't vote for Jabari Brisport."
Yes.
How did that feel?
terrible. Also because I saw it after I lost.
So you lost and then...
Well, I lost and he reached out. He sent me a message saying, you know, great job. Again, like you went up against an incumbent. That's pretty, you know, 30% is a really, really admirable, especially Green Party. And I was like, oh, awesome. And then I was like, I started going through his like wall again. I'm like, oh, Andrew's pretty nice. And I saw that post.
And you're like, oh.
I was like, WTF. What is
but, that? I mean, is there anything that you said in your back and forth with Andrew from the 2016 election to your 2017 election that you regret?
Yeah. I would say after Trump got elected, I think the night that he won, I kind of sent him like this gotcha picture because I was just, stumbled onto his wall, and here's this picture he had posted of himself just like really welling up with tears and holding his face in his hands. So I kind of like juxtaposed like what he had said with the image of him crying, and yeah. I was like, well, this
kind
is...
of what's the expression? Shoving his face in the dirt,
rubbing his face in it, or
yeah,
but yeah, and that was I think tactless, and like also like he was probably still very upset. And this was like I think the day after I was like, Trump got elected when New York was so oddly silent that, like, I sent that to him. And he didn't see it for months.
And then you got the notification that he saw it.
Yeah.
Have you and Andrew ever had, like, a long, sustained conversation offline about your differences?
No.
Are you interested in it?
Yes.
Okay, great. Well, you've come to the right place. Amazing.
I'm really nervous all of a sudden.
Really?
And it's not you. I know you're very... you're just a great host and great at making people feel comfortable, but it is like, it's awkward talk in person to someone that you've argued with online because we all say things online that we wouldn't say in person. And we also know we say things online when in person. And like, I'm already going through my head all the, just things I said that I wouldn't have said to his face.
But I think the same for him. It's not like a one-way street with you guys specifically. I mean,
true.
Hello?
Hey, is this Andrew?
Hey, yeah.
Hey, Andrew, it's Dylan.
How's it going?
I'm good. How are you? Wait, how was your amazing trip?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it was just incredible.
Yeah.
It was adventure in every sense of the word. I mean, like, there was the great parts and then the kind of scary things going wrong parts.
Yeah.
Then those also end up being great in retrospect and the stories and all that stuff. So it had all like the good and the bad and everything in between, which is kind of all you can hope for.
Okay, great. So I know you have lunch, you said at 1:30, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll...
which I didn't know about.
No, that's okay. We'll bang this out. But I just want to know in as many details as you're comfortable telling me. Tell me about you.
Ooh, okay. let's see. I am a... 31-year-old former actor and performer, but I now am going to grad school in political management. I am working with the National Parks Conservation Association, lobbying for protecting national parks, which is a joy right now.
Seriously, you have your hands full.
Working on a campaign for Congress in Virginia for 2018, and I'm also an avid rock climber, and I work at a climbing gym in D.C. I do all sorts of crazy things to keep myself busy. Yeah.
So, Andrew, you and Jabari got into what we can say is a very typical 2016 series of Facebook fights with each other.
Sure.
And it was centering around the 2016 election, specifically from the vantage point of, like, Jill Stein versus Hillary, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think of, you know, it initially was like the Bernie Hillary thing, then evolved into the Stein Hillary thing once, you know, Hillary got the nomination.
What was it that kind of like built up the online animosity between you guys?
So what I always say is that with Bernie, I actually agree with him on pretty much every single policy.
Mm-hmm.
Every single thing that he wants to see done is something I would be so happy about.
Mm-hmm.
However, if I don't think that that's possible in the environment we live in, and if he doesn't have a plan to pay for those things, and if I look at the environment we're in and Congress is still going to be run by Republicans, and so if there's literally no pathway to achieve those goals, I think talking about them and making promises that you know you can't fulfill is disingenuous. And so... for me, I'm a pragmatism over
perfection kind of person. Mm-hmm. I think making slow, steady progress, while it's not as exciting and it doesn't, you know, make the best bumper stickers and doesn't rile up the biggest crowds, it actually hurts fewer people as we get slowly towards the place we want to be, as opposed to the Bernie or Bust Jill Stein wing that, while I think they are actually right in the sense that I think Trump winning is going to get us closer towards progress faster than had Hillary won. But how many people are going to have to get hurt or die in the process? Like, that's the difference. So I'm not willing to let those people get hurt for progress, but the people who support, you know, the Bernie or Bust or Jill Stein method, the, you know, when they know their candidate can't win and that the support of that candidate helps Donald Trump in this instance win, that to me signals that you care more about the policies you want enacted than you do about the real people's lives that are at stake. And that's something I can't get behind.
You made a public post right before the 2017 elections, the 2017 local elections, where you were imploring your New York friends to vote, but you said, please don't vote for Jabari Brisport. Why, what inspired you to write that?
I guess we just operate from two very different philosophies on how to achieve progress. And I think personally that his philosophy is not only somewhat dangerous, but also just ill-conceived.
So correct me if I'm wrong. To sum it up, you agree with him on an ethical level, but on a practical level, you guys feel like you're polar opposites.
I think that's generally accurate.
So in this era of social media and in your exchanges with Jabari, did you ever feel like attacked by Jabari?
Oh, I mean, totally. Come on. But so did he. I mean, we both dish it pretty well. I mean, we ran into each other in real life at a rally in early, probably like early 2017. And we're totally like, totally cool and totally cordial with each other and just laughing like, oh my God, good to see you forever. And that was after like we'd already been pissed at each other online, right? But in real life, you see each other and it's like, all that's not there.
So you and Jabari have both dedicated yourself to politics and public service, right?
Yeah.
But in very different ways. So what to you is the most productive way to take part in the political sphere?
I don't think there's any one tried and true, like across the board, like best way to be involved. I think just doing whatever you feel you're capable of doing is the best. And for me, I just happen to be somebody who is so incredibly passionate about this stuff, and I live it and eat it and breathe it and sleep it.
And I also think maybe the reason you and Jabari clashed online is because both of you have that passion.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right? Like, because both of us are very strong personalities.
Is there anything you want to express to Jabari that is hard to express online?
I would be interested to actually hear him a little bit more and like actually get an opportunity to like listen to the whys and the, you know, because I think what's interesting is I don't think people really listen online. Because even though all the words are spelled out right in front of you and you could read them 3, 4, 5 times if you wanted to, people don't. But when you're in person with somebody, you're much more cognizant of being an asshole in like person, you know, than you are online.
So now I guess both of you will get that opportunity.
Sounds good.
Hi. How's it going?
Stay right there. We'll be right back. If you like this podcast and you want to help support it directly, you can check out our merch store. We have brand new shirts that say empathy is not endorsement, a mantra I've made for the show, and stickers that say what I say at the end of every episode, remember there's a human on the other side of the screen. Also, there's a shirt that has Rob Wilson's beautiful logo for our show on it. Check it all out at www.conversationswithpeoplewhohateme.com and click on merch. All right, let's get back to the conversation.
Jabari, Andrew, we're here on the phone together.
Awesome.
Yes, we are. How about that?
To start us off, is there anything that you said to the other person on this call that you now regret?
I honestly have a very poor recollection of specific things. I mean, I know it got like pretty bad at one point.
What does pretty bad mean?
Jabari, maybe you could honestly, I'm just going to ask you because I can't. Was there something that I sent you that then gave you like the impetus to then send me that awesome screenshot?
Yeah. No problem. So, it was in one of our many Facebook battles where we were going back and forth and like riling each other up to the point where I think you said I can't wait for all you Sanders supporters' dreams to be crushed.
Right. Like, I don't actually think I've ever called you a, like, shit human being or something, or, like, that you're... I mean, if I have, I apologize, because I don't think you are, but...
I don't think you are either.
Oh, guys.
All right, great.
Look, the world is beautiful.
But even though the words themselves, maybe, like, taken out of context and said differently, don't really sound that bad, the feeling that I was feeling behind writing them was really angry, you know, like, was really, mm-hmm. like, actually... like very emotionally invested in it. So it's not so much that I don't agree with the stuff behind what I said, but maybe the way I did it or said it or whatever, I could have, you know, done it in a better, less, you know, like yeah. I said, petty way.
Jabari, same question for you. Is there anything that you regret saying to or about Andrew on Facebook?
Yeah, definitely that screenshot meme.
Yeah,
for Andrew. I mean, in the moment, it felt like the right thing to do, mm-hmm. just because, like, truthfully, like, I know, like, part of it was like the text saying, like, I can't wait for your dreams to be crushed, and like my dreams were crushed.
Yeah, but then found a photo of Andrew with his dreams crushed.
Yeah, and like it just felt like the right. I wanted to find a wound that you had and rub salt in it.
Yeah.
You did a good job of that.
So sorry.
In the wound. Well, it seems like you both had wounds and you both knew where the salt was.
Yeah.
I think that's probably pretty accurate. Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, perfect. Now, I want to kind of turn this conversation a little more macro, because this kind of contentious exchange that you had is actually not specific to the two of you, right? This was mm-hmm. happening in comment sections and in inboxes all around the internet, where there was this like Jill Stein versus Hillary battle to the death. Do you guys think that that was worthwhile?
I don't know if anybody changed anyone's minds.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think it even like made things worse. It just like these people really entrenched themselves on Facebook, and I've just seen it in comment section, and like nobody walks away from a Facebook argument feeling like they should change their mind. I think they walk away and start doing Google searches to like find extra mm-hmm. data or research for why they're right, because they have to be right.
Yeah.
It's out in public now.
And we do live in a time when you can find the data to back up your point. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like
yeah.
it's less like finding, you ask a question and then search for an answer. It's more you have an answer and you search for all of the evidence to back up that answer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Actually, I think Jabari is 100% correct on that. My dad is a political psychologist, and recently was part of a paper that got published that definitively showed that when you actually argue with somebody about policies or, you know, politics in general, all you're doing is strengthening their own beliefs. And so basically, the more you challenge somebody's opinion, the stronger their arguments become. You know, if I'm a Hillary person arguing with a Jill Stein person, by doing that and trying to convince them they're wrong, I'm actually helping that person develop better arguments to support their own position. Learning about that, and actually this whole last, you know, 2 years or so, has made me sort of start to reevaluate how we have these conversations, just because if trying to convince somebody does the opposite, then why do we keep doing it? Yeah. Or why do I keep doing it? Right.
Yeah. So I guess I just need to bring this up. It feels like all of this is kind of a moot point, because neither Jill Stein nor Hillary nor Bernie are president, and Trump is president. So do you feel like what you engaged in was just fruitless infighting, or do you think there was a purpose to your arguments online?
I wouldn't say it was fruitless. Like, I mean, I learned a lot. Mm-hmm. So for me personally, like it really strengthened my sense of like, and honed my sense of what I want out of politics. But in terms of like political change, I would say it did not accomplish much, if anything.
Mm-hmm. All right. So this is the part where like, this could get contentious.
Okay, babe, bring it on.
Because I honestly, truly believe that a lot of the discussions that took place on social media surrounding, you know, the Bernie versus Hillary, Jill versus Hillary, how terrible Hillary was, genuinely hurt her in the polls. And so it's really hard for me to say that the negative discussions and the anger and the arguing had no impact, because I think it did have an impact. I think it had a negative impact.
Obviously I disagree, but mostly because I know that I made up my mind so early on, even regards to Jill. I knew Jill was going to be my number two, like back in like, I would say February of the 2016 election. And like, I don't know. I don't know of anybody who made their decision to vote based on like what they were seeing in Facebook arguments. It seemed like the arguments themselves were the product of people having staked out who they were going to vote for originally. I think it's just like social media was more of a reflection of what was already in people's minds. And like, I have a hard time buying this narrative that there is this voter out there that was maybe on the fence, and you know, they saw enough memes and they decided to flip over a candidate.
Like, did you individually feel like you got something out of your Facebook battle with each other?
I honestly do learn a lot through having them.
But did you feel like you got something out of the barbs?
Oh no, that's just bullshit.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I can't think of anything. I mean, I learned how to be a better debater, I guess.
Yeah.
Andrew's a good debater.
Just,
but
I mean, that's just the ego shit coming into it, right? Like, you know, it gets to a point where you're just trying to win instead of learn mm-hmm. something or, you know, convince or whatever you're trying to do, right? You're just trying to like look better.
Yeah. I would love to hear from you guys. This is very macro. Do you believe in incremental change or radical change in terms of achieving progress?
I believe that all radical change comes incrementally. I think that every giant change that has ever happened in this country was boiling under the surface for decades. And it all was a process that you can trace back to individual people taking steps and then it building on the next step and the next step and the next step. And it builds into a movement and a wave until it gets to that tipping point, right? And then it tips and then it happens, right? And it feels like it happened overnight, but it didn't. Nothing has ever happened overnight. For me, I'm thinking about the human cost of progress. And yes, I think blowing up the system and burning it to the ground makes change happen faster. It also hurts way more people in the process. So what we're seeing right now, I think we're going to, because of Donald Trump, get faster progressive change than we would have under Hillary Clinton. I think the Bernie or bust people were right about that. However, look at the human cost right now.
Yeah, I like to just for the record say I'm not an accelerationist. I don't know about, I also disagree with the people that were saying let's make it get really bad first in order to speed up progressive changes. And in terms of radical versus incremental, like I hear the argument about like, you know, things moving incrementally and eventually leading to radical change. But I just think that in order to even get it to move, get the needle to move, like we just have to be radical and we have to make radical demands. And that comes from my experience in the gay marriage movement, where I even started out thinking I was the reasonable, practical one saying that gay marriage wouldn't happen, maybe not even in our lifetimes, but that we should fight for civil unions first. And that was the accessible, practical, like reasonable thing to do. And once we won those, we would get marriage and eventually being swung over by people saying, no, we're going to demand for equality and nothing less, and watching them fight and fight. And yeah, it happened incrementally, state by state, until it stopped being incremental. And that's kind of where I see how the best victories happen is when you are, and when you know you're right and you resolutely demand it and you push for it. And like a tug of war, you pull with all your might and it moves a tiny, tiny bit and every little bit until, you know, the whole team comes crashing over to your side.
So I know I'm just like a fly on the wall here on this conversation, but I have to say, I feel like in this conversation about like what is like the most effective way to get change and listening to you guys, I feel like it takes both of you. Like, I feel like it takes, it is the tension actually between Andrew, your perspective, and Jabari, your perspective that actually pushes to that. Like, I feel like every movement has benefited from, you know, radical people who pushed equality, 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 and then the people who were at the other end of the seesaw saying incremental, incremental, incremental. And then either way, like that energy between them and that tension between them created the change.
I think that's an absolutely correct assessment, because also I'm not perfectly consistent on this either. Like, I don't think that incrementalism is always correct. Mm-hmm. And I don't think radicalism is always wrong. You know, it's not so much that, so the people on, you know, who feel like I do, I don't think we necessarily, you know, like to brand ourselves as incrementalists or whatever, but mm-hmm. it's just working within the structure of the system that currently exists, right? Like, not wishing that the system were something else, but seeing it for the way it is, and how can I play the game the best I can under the current rules, the way they're set up, so that we can win. I've always felt that it's massively important to have people who are on the far, you know, extremes of the party who can rally that base, and have people who are able to negotiate around that middle section, right? And you need both of those. But the problem is you need them working together, mm-hmm. not for completely separate aims. That's the issue that we run into, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, I would agree about the working together thing. And just like, I mean, that comes up for me too. Like, I'm in the Democratic Socialist of America, and we argue internally on our mm-hmm. own just about electoral politics, because a solid base inside the organization wants to work within the Democratic Party, electing socialists as Democrats, and then another solid base wants to work outside the Democratic Party on the, you know, to the left of it. And we argue about it all the time, and then the people release their platforms, and people release their, and it goes back to like, you know, that, like what your dad was talking about, Andrew, too, with just the arguments getting stronger. It's like, you know, this person releases their 30-page point mm-hmm. thing of why we need to be working outside yeah. the party, and then the other side has their 30-page whatever. And we had a great compromise in New York City where the organization endorsed one Democrat for the 2017 elections and one Green for the 2017 elections. And in both scenarios, got around 500 people out to volunteer and work on both campaigns. And it's good to be able to work together on a common goal, even yeah. if we don't all agree on every single like bit of minutia.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Because the thing that frustrates me, honestly, with all of it, is that I think Jabari and I probably agree, again, on like 96% of mm-hmm. things, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But yet we let that like 4% drive a wedge in between us. I think there is room for these two sides to work together, but the problem is it takes more nuance than we're able to get into on social media, I feel like. And like, memes don't allow for nuance, and any sort of productive relationship, I feel like, between these two sides is going to have levels of nuance.
Maybe, please confirm, but this conversation had a little more nuance than your Facebook back and forth?
Just a tiny bit, just yeah. like a smidgen.
Yeah. I was literally just going to say that. Yeah, just like the smallest, yeah. ever smallest. So slight, yeah. slightest yeah. bit.
So I have to ask, what is the status of your Facebook friendship right now?
I don't think we're friends, are we?
You're not friends. Wait, so who unfriended whom?
Oh God, I mean, probably me or you. I don't know.
It's definitely you, Andrew. Andrew, you.
It was, okay, so
it was definitely me.
Jabari, it wasn't you.
No.
Andrew?
Then I guess it was probably me.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but you did send me that really shitty meme. So.
guys, we were doing so well. We were doing so well. Okay, let's.
No, I know.
But back on track, do you think that maybe after this call you would become Facebook friends again?
up to you, Andrew.
No. Listen, I actually, yeah. I mean, I personally, I would totally be friends again. That's not like even in a question in my mind, because I'm trying to be way more conscious of, you know, what happened in 2016 was a result of echo chambers, right? Was about like sort of
everybody, you know, cultivating the perfect news feed that reaffirmed all their own belief systems and made them think we were, you know, they were right about everything. And everybody pushed out anybody who didn't agree with everything that they agree, you know, they mm-hmm. felt. And I mean, I definitely did that with you. And I know people do that to me as well. Mm-hmm. So that was a really long-winded way of saying, yeah, I'm totally down.
to be Facebook friends again.
I would be willing to give it a shot.
Okay. Jabari, what about you?
I'm going to give it a shot too. We actually will probably get along.
Yeah. I mean, listening to this conversation, I'm like, these are friends who ultimately get along. It's just so funny that your online relationship is so different.
Yeah.
Well, I think that is a perfect micro. Like, I mean, you could apply that to just the world.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As a closing question, I just have to ask, is there anything you're going to do differently after this call?
I might reach out to some of the other people that are... can I say Andrew-esque? Other people I may have sparred with.
Please. Feed my ego like that. I love it.
Yeah.
Other people I might have sparred with and like maybe get a conversation going. Because this was... This is pretty nice, I think.
Pretty nice, I think. That should be the tagline of this podcast. Pretty nice, I think. Andrew, what about you?
Pretty nice, I think.
Yeah.
I love moments like this, right? Because we do genuinely disagree on a few things, and especially on tactics, right? But I also want to believe that there is room for both, and I want to believe that there's a way for us to figure out how to all work together. Because, oh my God, we have a common enemy, right? Like, we have a very clear common enemy. So why can't we just fucking get together and work on it? Like, all right. I think there's will to make that happen. But I think that what that takes from people like me is to just do a hell of a lot more listening and stop thinking that I inherently know all the answers, because obviously I don't. Because I was wrong quite a bit in the last year and a half or so. I feel pretty similarly, like that I would love to reach out to other people who I've gotten into, you know, emotional fights with, and try and, you know, take that emotion out of it and just, you know, see each other as people and try and get to the root of, you know, all of it.
Guys, this is beautiful. Look at us. Never, I can say...
I know. Changing the world.
Changing the world, all three of us. I can say with certainty, never on this show has there been a Facebook friendship that has been repaired. So this is a first, and I'm very proud.
Wow. All right. Well, there you go. Now, here's the thing. I will not guarantee that I will always follow you, but we will be friends.
What do you mean? How always follow like follow beliefs?
You can be friends but unfollow somebody.
Oh,
so you don't see their
stuff
in your news feed.
That's
as
shady.
Much?
You can't escape me, man. I have people that unfollow a friend of theirs liked my comments, so they had to see it.
I needed to add a little bit of contention.
I love the contention.
It was way too happy.
Yes, this is perfect. This is a cliffhanger for the franchise of the Jabari versus Andrew conversation. This is tipping for the sequel, so it's all happening.
Right, exactly.
Well, Jabari and Andrew, thank you so much for being part of this conversation. Any final things you want to say?
I just want to say thank you to Jabari for even, because I know, Dylan, you went to him and asked who he wanted to talk to, and he mentioned me, and I actually just really appreciate that, even if that means that we had, you know, difficult conversations in the past, I appreciated the opportunity to be able to talk to you. And in person and you know, have this discussion. So thanks for that.
Yeah, I figured you'd be a good person to talk to. I mean, it was almost because, you know, I know we had some really deep disagreements, but I also, deep down, I did kind of hear what you were saying, and I thought it might be good to talk it out.
Yeah. Oh, I think one last thing, really, because I think that's actually really interesting, is that even if, you know, two people who are fighting on the internet make points that actually do get through to the other person, you can't admit it on the internet, right? Like, you've got to, like, keep that armor and that, like, persona intact, right? So even if there's one tiny thing that may have been like, oh, well, okay, well, maybe he's not so bad,
you still like, you're trying to play to your audience too, right?
Yeah.
And so it's nice to sort of like get out of all that bullshit and like let that go and talk as like just people.
Yeah.
And you know, and this has actually been really great. So thank you both.
Oh,
actually.
Well, I guess I will see you guys on the internet.
See you on the internet.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay. Bye, Andrew.
Bye, Dylan. Bye, Jabari.
Bye, Andrew. Nice talking to you.
Yeah, you too.
That was a...
I thought that went really
well.
That
was pretty cool.
Yeah. If you'd like to be a guest on this show and take your own online conversation and move it offline, please visit www.conversationswithpeoplewhohateme.com for more information. Conversations with People Who Hate Me is a production of Night Vale Presents. Vincent Cascione is the sound engineer and mixer. Christy Gressman is the executive producer. The theme song is These Dark Times by Caged Animals. The logo was designed by Rob Wilson. And this podcast was created, produced, and hosted by me, Dylan Marin. Special thanks to Adam Cecil, Emily Moeller, and our publicist, Megan Larson. We'll be releasing episodes every other week, so I'll see you in 2 weeks with a brand new conversation. Until then, remember, there's a human on the other side of the screen.
Ooh, we're racing, racing through these dark times. And it's hard to take it, but we're gonna make it through these dark times. Make it through these dark times. Make it through these dark times.